In the remote French countryside, a woman sits alone in a crumbling 300-year-old house, military-grade night vision binoculars in hand, watching the valley below. She's reading intercepted emails between Bruno Lacombe and Pascal Balmy, philosophical musings about Neanderthals, human migration patterns, and environmental activism. The house, with its leaking roof and dead rat in a trap, serves as her perfect surveillance post. She's preparing to meet Pascal, leader of an activist group called Le Moulin, at a cafe in the village of Vantôme. Her mission? Infiltration. This unnamed narrator moves through the world with calculated precision. During her 8-hour journey from Marseille to this hilltop vantage point, she made numerous stops to sample regional wines, stealing jars of terrine along the way. Theft is a way to stop time, she reflects. It refocuses the mind. Her observations reveal both deep education and profound cynicism. She harbors particular contempt for people who use air quotes, finding such affectations unbearable. Through her eyes, we begin to see a world where everyone is performing, where identity itself might be nothing more than a carefully constructed facade. How much do we really know about the people in our lives? Our narrator met Lucien Dubois 6 months earlier in Paris, approaching him at a bar near Place de Vosges. Every detail was calculated. Tight jeans with suspenders, a white t-shirt framing her breasts, all designed to attract him. When he kissed her, she responded with calculated shyness. 3 months later, they lived together, exactly as planned. It's remarkable how little people actually need to know about someone to accept them completely, she observes. Lucien never questions her fabricated identity, a cultured 34-year-old American who speaks French, walks dogs, and knows enough cinema to converse with film-obsessed Lucien. She claims to be from Priest Valley, California, poetic to French ears, but merely an uninhabited spot on Highway 198. This relationship is just her entry point to Pascal Balmy's circle. Pascal, considered Guy Debord's heir, comes from wealth and possesses magnetic charisma. Unlike Debord, who fell to bitterness and alcoholism, Pascal remains sober and publishes anonymously through Le Moulin. His strategic game with French authorities makes him dangerous enough for surveillance, precisely why her contacts are watching him. The narrator's past haunts her like a lengthening shadow. Her most troubling case involved manipulating a young animal rights activist in college. She cultivated his trust over months, implying romantic potential if he committed to more radical actions. Under pressure for results, she planted seeds of escalation during intimate conversations, suggesting they target research laboratories. She orchestrated everything, from introducing nitrate fertilizer to arranging its purchase with FBI funds. During the raid on Nancy's warehouse, both suspects were forced down. While the boys sobbed, Nancy's eyes met the narrator's with immediate recognition of the betrayal, a look that would haunt her for years. At trial, the narrator testified under a new identity. The jury accepted the entrapment defense, costing her agency position and forcing her reinvention in Europe's private sector. Priest Valley, her fictional hometown, became a symbol of innocence lost, as real in the boy's mind as their counterfeit love. Le Moulin mirrors society's contradictions. This former mill houses young idealists led by Pascal, yet maintains clear social divisions. Upper-class monks write theoretical texts against capitalism, while lower-class monks perform manual labor, tending walnut groves, pressing oil, and maintaining the property. Even in this revolutionary space, hierarchy persists. The characters showcase revolutionary complexity. René, the taciturn woodshop manager who becomes the narrator's lover, Aurélie, who runs the market stall with tough demeanor, and Birdmore, another American with a criminal record. Outside the commune, former member Nadia lives in chateau ruins with her truffle-hunting pig, Bernadette. Two elders guide the group. Jean Vialaine connects activists with farmers, while Bruno Lacombe sends philosophical emails. Bruno's daughter Naïs lives nearby, completely normal and apolitical, concerned with gas prices and chicken eggs. What fascinates is how this revolutionary world coexists with ordinary life. Radical theory circulates among people still worried about leaking roofs and relationship drama. The narrator navigates this environment, seeking someone manipulable into violence. Bruno's philosophical emails link prehistoric consciousness to today's environmental crises, introducing the invisible real, an ancestral perception that integrates spiritual understanding with physical awareness. His archaeological insights challenge conventional human evolution narratives, revealing complex migration patterns and fluid territorial boundaries. He portrays Neanderthals as sophisticated artists who represented abstract concepts through pigments. These ideas connect directly to Lemulin's activism against megabasins, massive water retention systems for industrial agriculture threatening traditional farming and regional ecology. The Mulanards view these basins as symbols of corporate control over essential resources. Their resistance includes strategic sabotage, cutting a TGD power cable, causing an electrical substation fire, and using zebra mussels to disable a megabasin pump. The narrator's investigation deepens upon discovering her contact's true agenda, orchestrating a confrontation between the Mulanards and Paul Platin, a French bureaucrat they've been monitoring. As the Vendôme Agricultural Fair approaches, the narrator's mission darkens. Her contacts demand someone from Limoulin attack Platin. When she argues Pascal isn't capable, they insist someone there is. She manipulates potential candidates, Dennis and Francoise, a rejected couple who might regain status through action, and Birdmore, whose criminal past makes him vulnerable. She prepares an antique Lebel pistol for Birdmore, framing the planned confrontation as resistance against policies driving farmers to suicide. Meanwhile, her personal life crumbles. Her affair with Renee is exposed, Lucien moves on with Emily, and she discovers articles about her previous undercover identity, driving her to self-medicate. At the fair, the plan falters when Birdmore abandons the operation, keeping the pistol as a souvenir. Chaos erupts as protesters clash with riot police amid tear gas. Frank circles Platin on his motocross bike. When officials escorting Platin fall, he flees toward logging displays, but his polished Italian shoes betray him as the logs shift, his scream silenced by an avalanche of timber. In the aftermath, the narrator retreats to a coastal refuge, where visions of lay babies, naked figures in chef's hats, float past her veranda, comforting while reminding her of choices leading to isolation. She connects with the night sky, tracking the Big Dipper. On a moonless night, following Bruno's teachings, she locates Polaris and discovers the Difficult Dipper, visible only without light pollution, finding direction in darkness and truths that emerge when everything else fades. Her days adopt a rhythm of watching the sea, reading, and solitary walks. When her former life beckons, she claims retirement to Priest Valley to protect her solitude. The narrator referred to the salt, a pure core truth beneath performances, accessible at 4 a.m. when defenses lower. Bruno's emails suggest humans have lost connection to something essential while advocating deeper engagement with life's mysteries. In our surveillance-filled world, perhaps authenticity means acknowledging truth's elusiveness. Like ancient navigators, we must navigate by patterns rather than individual stars.